Get set for Foamy February with 10% off beer ingredients by using the code BB10 at highgravitybrew.com. As a special offer to Basic Brewing Radio listeners, Desiree and Dave have set up a discount code that will give you 10% off anything under the beer ingredients menu on highgravitybrew.com. Use BB10, that's BB10, and get 10% off the Build Your Own Beer page, beer ingredient kits, grain, hops, yeast, adjuncts, everything under the beer ingredients menu on highgravitybrew.com. This code can't be combined with other offers, but what a deal! Remember, BB10, that's better than BB8 on highgravitybrew.com. That's highgravitybrew.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 18th, 2024. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Steve Wilkes and I sample an experiment comparing what happens when you just let whole hops float on top of a beer during dry hopping and when you put them in a bag and weigh them down, sinking them into the beer. We'll be using the new experimental pink hops from Idaho for our tasty test. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and many thanks to everybody who's helping out that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters will see a couple of things this week. First, they'll be seeing an early release of the video that Steve and I shot about his delicious sweet stout that he made with brown sugar and molasses. That was a really fun beer. He calls it a sweet stout, but it wasn't too sweet. Even though it finished fairly high in gravity, Steve, of course, balanced it very well with his hopping strategy. Financial supporters will get the recipe for that beer, too. And as something special in connection with this audio episode that you're listening to right now, financial supporters will get a short behind-the-scenes video showing how I put this dry hopping experiment together. I brewed 3 6-packs, one with no dry hopping as a control, the second with the floating dry hops, and the third with the sunk dry hops. And I hope you all enjoy that peek behind the curtains. Man, it's cold this week. Here in northwest Arkansas, we got a bit of snow, and it's sticking around because it's been in the single digits. And I know a lot of you say, oh, you know, but it's, doggone it, you know, we're not used to this stuff. I know folks to the east of us in Tennessee and other places got it worse, though. Last time that I checked the basement downstairs, it's around 50 degrees or 10 degrees Celsius. So I think that's even too cold for lagering, or at least primary fermentation of lagers. But, you know, we're stocked up on beer and groceries, so, you know, we're good. And I've even stocked up on content for the show. In the can, we have a Mash Your Luck episode with Adam Ross and Scott Housel, and a recipe development show with Matt Giovannisi and Josh Secor. And then Frost Fest is coming up next month in Fayetteville. We're planning to go to that. And in March, there's a big sake festival in Hot Springs that I'm really excited about. So 2024 is looking good. It's zooming along. It's cold, but, you know, as far as this show is concerned, it's going good. In the next set of video episodes that Steve and I record, I'm planning on sharing my homebrew version of veneer mead that I got ingredients for from our friends and sponsors Ricky and Kelly of Groenfell.com. I got the 1 gallon mead ingredient kit, very reasonably priced, by the way, and Susan and I bottled that up in 12-ounce beer bottles. Now, I chose that over wine bottles, even though the kit came with corks for wine bottles. I just like having the option, you know, of a smaller serving size because my veneer came in at more than 13% ABV, and it's delicious. The mead ingredient kit came from Groenfell.com with delicious Vermont honey, yeast, nutrient, the corks, a piece of oak for aging, and very well-written instructions to take you through the process. And you can get 1 or 5 gallon ingredient kits along with 1 and 5 gallon equipment kits that are well thought out and put together. If you have a friend or family member who's wanting to get into making mead, you know, this is great stuff for them as well. Head on over to Groenfell.com and click on the homebrew link and do what I did. While you're there, pick up some of the delicious craft and traditional meads that are already made that you can sip on while you wait for yours to be ready. That's at family-owned and operated Groenfell.com. That's Groenfell. Okay, this was a very fun experiment to do and a sample, and it was extra tricky because we had to do some detective work and troubleshooting along the way. Some podcasts would not air an episode if there was a screw-up, but here you go. You get it warts and all. Or is it warts and all? See what I did there? Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James.
Are you ready to taste some beer?
Yeah, I am. I understand we're going to do a close sensory panel of a single hop, actually.
Yeah. It's not hops that we're comparing. It's techniques this time. And what All a lovely right. day to drink beer. It's snowy and cold and blustery and yucky. And then tomorrow it's going to be sunny and 50. So
yep.
My sinuses are going to be rebelling in the next couple of days. It's not so much the constant bad weather. That'd be all right. But it's like, you know, bad, good. You know, my head didn't know what to do. So while my nose is free and I'm free and not running, we have some beers that are hopped with some wet hops, formerly wet hops, from our listener Jason Reisinger of Middleton, Idaho, who originally wrote back Halloween.
Well,
he says, "Happy Halloween. I'm a fan of your Basic Brewing radio and video shows." Well, thanks, Jason. "And really enjoy the hop sampler series that you and Steve do. I have an overabundance of experimental 158 hops that I purchased in September to do my first wet hopped beer and wanted to know if you would like some." Of course, the answer is yes. "I live in Idaho, about a 20-minute drive from Mill 95, where they process the hops in the area. Normally, the mill only distributes to breweries and larger commercial entities, but I was able to snag 10 pounds,
goodness,
of wet pink, in quotation, hops, which are, it's what they call the experimental 158. I made two wet hop beers, and then, like all good homebrewers, I took the screen door off the patio and laid the rest out on it with a fan blowing to dry them out. About 12 hours, I bagged and vacuum sealed them and then put them in the freezer. The variety is pretty new. In fact, this is the first commercial year for it, I read online. They did a small run last year and then had some more this season. It's more of an aroma flavor hop with big citrus and stone fruit flavors. If you're interested, just let me know and I'll get them in the mail." And he did. He sent me like 8 ounces, I think. I took some and I made a hop sampler kind of a deal. What I did was I have a control. And this is also inspired by a second letter from Jason, because he sent us a beer. I don't know if you remember, but we tasted his beer at the end as a bonus beer of one of the hop samplers down in the breakfast nook. He says, "I included a few bottles of a hazy IPA that I made with the pink hops. I didn't get as much flavor from the dry hop charge that I added, probably because after I added them through the carboy neck, they just kind of sat on top of the beer and didn't intermix well. If I had to do it over again, especially with the cones, I would have used a hop bag with some weight in it to submerge them. Still, it was pretty tasty." And if you'll remember, that was a delicious beer. Could it have been better? I don't know. But it was dang tasty. We liked it quite a bit. So that inspired the experiment. I was like, hey, what does happen if you just float hops on, you know, especially whole hops, on top of a beer? Or if you go to the extra effort to put them in a bag and weigh them down and dry hop in that manner? So why don't we have three bottles in front of us. They are randomized by Susan. One has a sticker number one, one has a sticker number two, and the other has a sticker number three. So shall we start? Shall we try bottle number one?
Bottle number one. What's behind bottle number one?
There's a little bit of
hiss. It's this lovely couch.
It's a camel.
It's a camel.
Remember they do that on Let's Make a Deal? They would bring out it's a camel.
Yeah. Oh, it's an old toilet.
With Johnny, what's his name, sitting on it?
That's right.
Ooh, that's a pretty beer.
This is a very lovely little beer.
It didn't hiss.
Clear as a bell.
Yeah, it didn't hiss very much, but.
Mine has a really good head on it.
Yeah.
So, you know. Well, yeah, it looks like it looks like an old Budweiser commercial from the 50s.
Well, I bottled it on December 1st, so we actually waited this time.
Mm. Oh. Ooh, that's very good.
I can actually smell it.
Yeah. That's very nice.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
It's got a nice bright hop character up front.
Mm-hmm. It's also got that kind of a kind of stone fruit, you know. It's kind of got some, like, I can taste peach or apricot, you know, a little bit. I get some citrus. I get the honey. The reference to honey, I actually get that. What I don't get very much of is pine. In other words, I was expecting kind of a Chinooky thing.
No.
And I don't get that at all.
No, it's there's not a lot of bitterness.
No.
Even though, according to the spec sheet that Jason got a hold of for us, the alpha acid is supposed to be like 13.6%.
I knew it was high alpha acid.
But remember, these are wet hops that were dried by a home brewer on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we don't know the exact moisture percentage, you know, right. So that, you know, that's a variable. That's really nice. The beer is clear.
Mm-hmm.
It's very lightly colored. I would drink a whole pint of this and be very happy.
Yeah, I would too. I think it's a nice little American style pale ale. Nothing extravagant or outrageous about it. It's very approachable. It might have a little too much flavor for Coors Light drinkers, but
it's definitely has too much flavor for Coors Light drinkers. But in that, it has flavor.
It has flavor. That's right. But it's not. It's definitely not a. You know, it's not an India Pale Ale kind of amount.
No, I'd say it's a solid pale ale.
Yeah, they're very nice beer, and it's just DME, right?
Nothing. Yeah. Would you like to hear the recipe?
I would love to hear recipe.
You could probably recite with me. this is the typical hop sampler recipe. These are three 6-packs of beer that I did the same way. I started with 3 quarts or about 3 liters of water. Into that, I put 1 pound or 450 grams of Pilsen light dry malt extract. I brought it just up to the boil. So, you know, the boil was just starting to break. And around here, it's like 209, 210 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that, with my instant read thermometer. And just at that point, I shut off the heat and I add the hops. And then I set it aside off the heat for 10 minutes and let those steep. Mm-hmm. And then I cool it down with an ice bath. And once it's cooled, I transfer it into a 1-gallon jug and add 3 grams of USO5 dry yeast.
And gotcha.
And then ferment. And then at bottling time, we've been using those little aspirin-sized carbonation tablets.
Yeah.
Instead of the carbonation drops.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the aspirin-sized ones because you can, you know, if you wanted a little more fizzy, you can put
a little more...
another one in.
Yeah, they are a little more flexible. That's a fact. Yeah.
And I used 4 in each of these. So in previous batches, I didn't take gravity readings on this, but in previous batches, it started out at 1066, so did the Battle of Hastings. And finished at 10.09 for an ABV of 7.5%. So this beer does not taste like it's 7.5% alcohol.
No, it doesn't. Not at all.
So after fermentation, was complete. In one of them, I left it alone, you know, just left it as was. And the hopping. Well, I didn't talk about the exact amount of hops. I used half an ounce or 14 grams of whole pink hops for that 10-minute hop stand, you know, after it was brought up to the boil. Then after fermentation, primary fermentation was complete, in the first carboy, not necessarily beer number one that we're tasting here.
Right.
I put 1 ounce, or no, in the first one I put nothing. So it's the control. The other one, I just stuck 1 ounce of the full cone hops just through the neck of the jug and let them float on top. Again, this is inspired by Jason's letter.
Did you stir them in at all, or did you just dump them on there and let them go?
No, I just plopped them on there.
Okay. So because my theory is that perhaps it builds some kind of a little moisture barrier in a way so that the, you know, it doesn't, were they completely wet when, you know, by the time you got around to bottling?
Yeah. By the time it was bottling time, those that were floating on top were soggy.
Okay.
You know,
that's,
there
yeah.
Was
that's
no dry, I, there were no dry okay. hop fronds or whatever you call petals, whatever you call those things up on the top. So the third one, I took my old hop bag, and I put some glass marbles in it, and I put the 1 ounce of whole hops in there, and then I fermented that third batch in a plastic bucket. So there is a second variable being introduced into the equation, but I didn't want to try to fit. I didn't have a second plastic or a third plastic bucket. You know, I didn't have three plastic buckets, and I didn't want to have to try to like stick the hop bag in through the neck of a jug. So I put that one in the bucket with that beer, and they sunk. You know, there was enough glass marbles in there where it sunk to the bottom.
Right.
So that's the experiment, and I shot video of all this. And I'm planning to release it as a behind-the-scenes video to upper-tier Patreon supporters, like by Friday of the week that you're hearing this. So,
cool.
And we're recording this a week before I'm planning to run it. So, there you go. Any questions on the process?
No, I think I've got it down pat.
It's not that hard. Okay, beer number two?
Beer number two.
Boy, we're running fast. We got a pad.
Well.
Ooh, I didn't get much hiss of that at all.
Now, beer number two did not pour as nicely as beer number one for me.
Yeah, it didn't.
There's no head.
It didn't hiss.
Mine hissed.
It might have hissed just a little bit, but there's no
mine
head.
Mine alger hissed.
Mine didn't. It does not have a head. And it does.
Mine doesn't either.
It's not carbonated.
It also is. It also seems to be. It's quite a bit darker.
Yeah,
mine is. It's quite a bit. I'd say it's probably on that What is it? The SMR, SLR, whatever scale.
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
SRM.
SRM.
I'm dyslexic.
Or SR. Or it's SRO. You can see Herb Albert if you get that.
I'm dyslexic. I belong to DAM, Mothers Against Dyslexia.
That's right.
Sorry. Dyslexia is not funny. It's a learning disorder. It's people struggle with it. Tommy Smothers, rest in peace, had dyslexia, and that's why he kind of stumbled around a bit and got the reputation for being the dumb one. Did you know that?
I did, and I think you've got that backwards.
No, Tommy died this.
I mean, you got dyslexia.
Oh, Jesus.
It didn't come out right.
Okay. All right. What were saying?
I was saying that this is a darker beer. It's a couple of 3 degrees darker.
Yeah, it seems like it to me, too.
So I don't know what's up with that, but it's definitely a different color.
Well, I mean, if you hold them up, it is. Well, yeah, it is a couple of shades darker.
Yeah, it's a couple of shades darker.
Hmm.
Now, could that be a difference in the malt extract itself?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, nothing in the process that you described to me would indicate that I'd get a significantly different looking beer. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not the difference to our listening audience. It's not the difference between a pale ale and a stout. Mm-mm. But it's the difference between a beer that looks like a pilsner and a beer that looks like kind of an English pale ale.
What do you think of the taste?
I haven't tasted it yet. Okay, here I go. Oh, that's – well, mine's not I mean, it's not carbonated very well.
Right.
However, and so it's sweet. And I think it's because the sugar, although there's a nice little yeast floor on the bottom of this, so it must have carbonated.
I don't know what, of course that could be, just sediment from the bottling process. It could have
that's true.
Sucked up some yeast.
It seems to me, it has a sweetness to it that I'm not sure if that's the bottling sugar that I'm tasting. But it's dull. Yeah. And it's a much softer, I don't get any kind of hop. It seems out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
It seems out of balance on the sweet side, on the malty side.
And I get a little bit of a vegetal character in there. Do you get
that? Yeah, I do. I get a little bit of vegetation, a little green vegetation.
Not green apple.
Not green apple. I still get the honey. I absolutely get the peach.
Hmm.
And in fact, or I should say the stone fruit, but it translates to peaches or apricots for me. But so I am getting, the flavors that I kind of expect to get if this beer was properly carbonated, and if it had a little bit of hop bite, it'd be really good.
Really?
In my opinion.
I don't care.
Because I like that.
I don't care for this beer. I don't know if it's just, I mean, there's no brightness, and part of that is the carbonation. I agree. But part of it to me is it lacks a bright hop character to me.
Well, I agree.
I'm not even getting a whole lot of you're getting, some of that hop character that we had in the first one, just duller. I'm not even to me it's kind of vegetal, and I don't know. I just don't like it.
Well, it's nowhere near as good as the first example. So between the two, I would definitely drink the first one. I was just thinking, as a brewer, what would I do to fix this? If I was going to do it again, and not knowing which incarnation of it is. It's interesting, very interesting, actually.
Yeah, they're very different.
And I never expect. I thought that they'd all be so darn similar that we'd never tell them apart.
That's what I was afraid of as well.
Doesn't mean I'll guess correctly, but they're very different beers.
Now, full disclosure, oftentimes I will take a sample of one of the bottles to make sure, that it's not nasty before I give it to you. Mm-hmm. So the other night, a couple weeks ago, I think, I was sitting watching TV, and I had just had a big American, West Coast, commercial IPA. And I was like, I'll have one of those others. And I took one of the controls, with the no dry hops, and I drank, and I drank it. I couldn't finish it. I got halfway through that pint. And I was like, ugh, this is just, especially after that big old hoppy, citrusy citrus bomb. I was just like, ugh, why am I wasting the calories? Let's move on.
Right.
I'm not saying that's what this is, but so I had that experience. And the next day, again, in full disclosure, I was like, I don't want to give Steve something that's nasty. So I opened a round of these, with knowing what was what. Mm-hmm. And I was assured that they weren't nasty. So I don't want to.
No, it's not. And, it's not nasty. It's a homebrew. It's a homebrew. Like the first beer is of commercial quality.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that means, it's a beer that if I had a tap room and I were pouring for the public, I'd be happy to serve that beer. It's actually quite a nice little beer. This one, this is like I've brewed four times and I don't know what I did wrong.
So these are the ones you'd get at the homebrew shop.
Exactly. These are the ones they'd bring you and go, what did I do wrong?
Ooh, this is nasty. Taste it.
Yeah, taste it. I brought you a six pack.
Honey, taste this. See if I need to throw it out of the fridge. Ooh.
That's right.
So what's your propensity, if that's a word? What's your proclivity? What are your leanings towards dry hopping? Do I do it? Yeah.
Very seldom. I almost never dry hop. I'm not much of a – I think that I'm kind of I'm very old school in my hops. I tend to do either a single hop charge when I'm brewing, say, a stout or something like that, and I don't – it's not about the hops. Or I kind of do the old Charlie Papazian, you know, at the boil, in the middle of the boil, and right at the end of the boil, and I call it good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, most of the time, that's how I tend to do it. Now, have I dry hops? Sure, of course I have. But I don't know. Maybe it's just because the kind of beers that I tend to brew don't lend themselves to a lot of dry hopping. That could be. And then, of course, I'm lazy. So that's,
yeah, I was going to say, most of the
that's
time,
the other part.
Most of the time I don't dry hop because I'm lazy. Because I just want to get it done.
I just want to be done with it. And so if I have to fool with it again in a day or two or three or four, you know, I just like, I don't want to do that. So, and I kind of find most of the time, now, of course, I don't want to be, you know, raked over the coals for this, but most of the time, if I add the hops, you know, the last hop charge within the last, you know, 15 to 10 to 5 minutes, you know, I still kind of get that dry hopped characteristic from it that I, as much as I want from it. So maybe just how my palate works, what appeals to me, I don't need to dry hop my beers. But I understand that that's recipe dependent, style dependent, effort dependent. I get all that. I'm just saying that, you know, that's kind of how I do it.
While I'm thinking about it, I forgot to say I brewed and pitched the yeast on November 16th. I dry hopped on the 26th of November, and then I bottled on the 1st of December. So that gives you an indication of, you know, how long they were in the fermenter and how long they were dry hopped. I forgot. I also forgot, I'm so in my zone when I brew that oftentimes I, number one, forget to add chemicals, minerals. even if I say I'm going to do it this time and I figure it out and everything, you know, I'm so in my rut that I forget to do it. Couple weeks ago or a few weeks ago, I brewed this oat malt stout that Chris Colby and Peter Simons and I, you know, collaborated on the recipe.
Yeah.
And Peter called for dry hopping with 2 ounces of cluster, I want to say. Yes. And so I fermented in a bucket. You know, I usually ferment it in a carboy, but I fermented it in a bucket because I was going to dry hop. And then I, you know, it's like it was done and I kegged it from the bucket. And then, you know, pressurized it, you know, was in the keg, in the kegerator for like 3 days. And I was down at the beer fridge and I looked at the door of the beer fridge and I said, what are these 2 ounces of cluster doing in here? And then I was like, oh, whoops. So right now I'm dry hopping in the keg. I depressurized the keg and I put the weighted bag of hops in the keg. I'll put them in there for 3 days and take them out. And she's like, oh, God, I'm an idiot. But I have had a lot of going on the past few weeks.
Yeah.
Holidays and family stuff and whatever.
That's
anyway,
right.
So even when I plan to dry hop, sometimes I forget. But some of the best beers like that, you know, those Centennial Bell's Two Hearted IPA clones that I do with, you know, where you dry hop with like 5 ounces of pellets in a 5 gallon batch.
Yeah.
Man, that's like one of the best beers ever. It's just delicious.
Well, I do like the flavor of fresh hops. I you know, like hop candy. You know, you're the real hop. I'm talking about candy mm-hmm. that you get. I love that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or hop. You know, I love the flavor of hops. So yeah, I mean, now you're kind of making me want to do that. Now, talk a little bit about the ins and outs of brewing with wet hops or, you know, full non-dehydrated hops, or not dehydrated, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And pellet hops. What's the difference between brewing with those two?
Well, there's wet hops, which are whole hops that are not even dried. They're just still on the vine, and you pick them and you throw mm-hmm. them in the kettle. Mm-hmm. They get a lot of water.
Yep.
And I can't remember what the percentage of water is, but you have to factor that in if you're going to weigh them to add to your kettle, to your boil, mm-hmm. Because they have a lower alpha acid percentage per hop cone as compared to dry because of the amount of moisture that's in there. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people just use wet hops at the end of the boil or in the whirlpool or, you know, in later stages of the brewing process. Then there's mm-hmm. whole cones that are mm-hmm. dried mm-hmm. and that do weigh, you know, the same. Although doesn't Ray Daniels in Designing Great Beers, doesn't he allow for a different calculation for whole cones versus hop pellets? I think hop pellets have more bang for the buck or bang for the weight, essentially.
Well, that's my understanding of it. And
yeah.
I'm not sure what Ray's book says, but I'm sure that's true.
Yeah, and if you're using
because
a calculator, some software, you know, you'll tell that, you know, whether it's whole or pellets.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's pellets that, to me, are my favorite way. You know, they don't soak up as much wort.
Right.
And when I took the bag out of the, you know, the weighted dry hopped one,
mm-hmm.
I had to resist the temptation not to squeeze that back
because yeah.
I was like, yeah, there's some beer in there and it might taste pretty good. But I didn't squeeze the bag because I didn't want to like add yet another variable to the equation.
Right.
And then there's other hop products like hop oil and hop extract and things like that. But
yeah, and then there's the super concentrated like cryo hops now.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
The kind of like freeze-dried hops. Now we're getting into mm-hmm. stuff where I barely know what I'm talking about. So
yeah, me too. You know, I used to sell them and I used them quite a bit, but they would have an alpha acid of 22, 24, 28%.
Yeah.
And you had to be, you know, you really shouldn't in a way use them as a bittering hop just because it's, well, for one thing, my brewing software wouldn't go that high.
Mm.
So I had no way to determine what the IBU might or might not be. So rather than risk it, I would use them as a dry hopping or a late hopping addition.
Right.
And I found them to be very useful in that context.
And I think they also have an impact on clarity as well.
Yeah, I think they do too. Yeah. Oh, and I used them a few times. I think I probably made more mead with them, speaking of cryo hops, than I did with beer. Then I made beer with them because I could essentially dry hop or hop the mead without adding, you know, I could get a lot of bang for my buck out of that 1 ounce of cryo hop. But otherwise, pellet hops for a home brewer are the easiest, most convenient way. And I'm not sure that the flavor's better or, you know. Now, using a wet hop, of course, you're right. That all that water content, you know, really makes it a challenge to use. And actually, the mess of throwing away the hops.
Mm-hmm.
When you're all done, you've got this giant mess that you don't have if you use pellets.
Yeah, it goes into the compost heap.
Yeah. So I'm speaking about guys that brew like I do, basically in a brew kettle, nothing fancy, you know, you got to clean all that stuff up by hand, kind of, and pellets are a lot easier to use.
Matt Giovannisi of Brew Cabin, Josh Secor of Gambit Brewing, and I got together to formulate the next beer that I'm going to brew. It's an extract beer,
And, you know, it's a 15-minute extract beer and an ale. You know, no spoilers. But I'm planning to brew it with the current featured lager yeast from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Yeast. It's L25 Hygge, which is a Northern European lager yeast famously used in Pilsner-style beers. Hygge complements significant hop additions, which is good because I'm gonna hop this beer a bunch. Eben from Imperial says Hygge is versatile, and our own Steve Wilkes brewed an IPA last year that turned out great. And why not? Those 200 billion cells in each easy-to-open package of Imperial yeast get the job done. My stir plate is dusty because I don't use it anymore to make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches of ale, and I'm not planning to make a starter for this beer. I'm confident my airlock will be bubbling before bedtime. Ask your local homebrew store about L25 Hygge from, that's H-Y-G-G-E, from Imperial Yeast, and check out all the dependable deliciousness at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com. I'm sampling beer number 3, and it is fully carbonated. You know, okay. I wonder if on that first round of bottles, if we just missed, if we just didn't put the, sugar in.
Well, maybe.
On batch one, those first 6 bottles, I just wonder if we just didn't prime.
Well, oh, wow, you're right. So 1 and 3 have got really nice heads, poured beautifully. Number two is slacker.
Well, number one and number three, they look and taste like real beers.
Yes,
I just wonder if we just didn't. Sometimes it gets a little confusing in the kitchen because it's like because I get an angry look if I say, did you put the sugar in those? Are you sure?
Right. Sure.
So I don't ask anymore.
Right.
Thanks for your help. I won't ask if you did it wrong.
Number 3 is much more like number 1.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a tasty little beer.
It's brighter. I don't get any of that vegetal taste at all.
I don't get any of the vegetation. I think it might be the most complex of the three for my palate. Let me go back to number one. Number one has the most, the first beer has the most traditional flavor to me. And number three has the most kind of, I don't want to say bubblegum because it's not mosaic. It's not going there, but it's kind of got the most of that fruity, you know, like non-traditional hop flavors. It's got a lot of stone fruit, but it's very soft. I don't taste any pine at all in this one. I do get some apple. I think I get some honey. You know, I mean, I kind of get those flavors, but this one I get the most of those and the least normal bittering flavor.
Yeah, I think there's more. It's more juicy. Number three is more juicy.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, I have a theory.
Yes.
In looking at the three of them, number two is definitely darker. I'm going to take a picture. Whether it'll be apparent on the photo or not is. I think. Okay, here's my theory.
Okay.
I think that number two did not get priming sugar. And I think that what I'm tasting as vegetal might be oxidation. And because the yeast didn't get a chance to scrub the beer with the oxygen out of the beer, you know, with that secondary fermentation, the bottle conditioning, that it's actually oxidized. And it's got it's darker. Oxidation causes darkening, and it's got an off flavor. To me, it's got a stale. I called it vegetal. Maybe it's oxidation. Maybe it just got oxidized.
You know, I buy that. I think that you're definitely onto something there.
And there's no way
makes perfect sense.
There's no way we can prove that.
Well, the only way you'd know would be to brew it again. That's the only way you'd ever know.
Or maybe if you took a gravity reading, if the gravity reading was different from the other two, maybe I could take like a refractometer reading or something. I don't know.
Oh, well, you could. You could take a refractometer reading from, you know, two of the beers, from, say, one and two. And even though it might not be exactly accurate.
If it's different. Yeah, it'd take all three refractometer readings. Yeah. And if it's different, then something's different. Mm-hmm. And it's probably, so it may be our fault. Interesting. Yeah. So two experiments in one, maybe.
Well, it is. But troubleshooting's part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you brew something and it's like, it's okay, but it, I mean, this one's really kind of not. I probably wouldn't drink this beer, but in fact, I know I wouldn't. But, you know, a lot of times you brew a beer and it's like, okay, that's pretty good, but it's not what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
In some way. And so being able to go back and kind of analyze your steps and even think about things that don't really seem like they'd matter, like how could the beer be oxidized? I just bottled it. Mm. Well, that's a way that it could be a little bit oxidized. And the fact that, you know, it's not completely flat. It does have some carbonation, but again, that could be trapped CO2 that just never, you know, moved out, you know.
Or maybe there was a tiny bit of sugar left over, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't completely done, or maybe there's some bugs in there that have started started working.
Well, keep the rest of these for a year.
Oh, God.
And then let's see what happens.
I'll keep them over here. You can have them. You just keep yours.
give them to Mikey. He'll try anything.
He likes it. Hey, Mikey.
Hey, Mikey. It's, ooh, the game of life.
That's the cereal of life.
Oh.
Okay. Now,
I
think we have some thoughts.
Yeah,
I think. Do you want to go first?
Sure.
With your thoughts?
The only one I have is that, and I think I'm going to call number two the controlled beer.
I think that's right.
And then I'm going to call number one the beer that the hops. Oh gosh, I don't know what I'm saying here. I'm going to say it's the beer that floated on top. That wasn't weighted.
Mm-hmm.
And number three is the beer that's weighted. And here's why I say that. I say it because number three has the most flavor of all three beers for my palate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would expect the beer that got the drowned hops to have extracted the most flavor. Now, here's the caveat. I prefer the first beer.
Ah!
So you know, see, so I've got a little bit of a dichotomy here. The technique that I think should produce the best beer, I'm calling number three. But the beer that I like the best is number one. So those are my guesses.
Interesting. I think I'm going with you because when I did that taste of the three sighted or the opposite of blind, the control was just like, blah, you know, it wasn't nasty. It just was blah. And the floaty hops was nice. It was actually, it's like, oh, well, this is good. And then I tasted the weighted hops. And it was like, oh, that's different, and I'm more hoppy. And I actually liked it better. Now, tasting them side by side, I think it's kind of a toss-up. They're both good, and I don't know that I could tell a difference if you served one pint to me and then separately another pint. You know, side by side, I can talk myself into saying that there's a difference.
Yeah.
And I think there might be, but I don't know that I really have a preference. They're both good.
I kind of agree with you, just meaning I had to pick one that I liked the best, at least I thought I did. And so I kind of prefer number one. But the first beer and the third beer are both quite good. I'd be very pleased to serve those to friends or guests. And number two, I would throw out.
Yeah. Yeah. Number two is unfortunate. And it might be just our mistake. Well, let's look at number two.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure we got back. Yep. Number two is the control. No big surprise.
No big there. Okay.
Number one is the bag.
It's the bag. Well, okay. That's very interesting, because I expected the bag to be the one I wanted the most.
And number three is the top.
And number three is the top.
Huh.
But I expected number three to be the one that was bagged because it has more flavor.
In this setting.
Setting, yeah.
with our brains, I think it's very close.
Well, it is very close. I mean, it really is. But nonetheless, that's the game.
And by the time we got to number three, tasting number three, it had been sitting out for like 30 minutes.
You know, that's true, except for my beers, I did not refrigerate.
What? You're just drinking them warm?
Well, you should be in my room.
Oh.
I think it's about 48 degrees in here.
Perfect serving temperature.
Exactly. That's why I didn't refrigerate them. They're at the temperature I like. I'm not kidding.
And you can hide your beers from your wife easier that way.
Yes, and when you wake up at 2 in the morning, it's like, I need a beer. No, I don't do that. But I thought about it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's very interesting. That's I thought I was dead on with that. Very interesting. So the bagged hop was the cleanest. So for my palate, the number one was the cleanest, brightest. It had the best hop charge in terms of bittering, and that kind of makes sense now. Number three, oh, okay, here's my take now, all of a sudden. Number three is closer to the control.
What?
It is to me. It's very soft. It doesn't have much of a hop charge at the back end, which also the control doesn't either. So I'm wondering if the bagged dry hop pulled just a little bit more bitterness, and somehow, I don't know, it just seems to be the cleanest, the most scrubbed, that's a perfect word. It doesn't have any kind of residual unnecessary sweetness in it.
Okay.
The other two do.
Okay, I just poured more from the bottles so that, you know, the two samples are probably around the same temperature now.
Yeah.
I think I like number one better.
it's my favorite.
To me, it's just...
So what? It means you got to teabag your hops?
Or just
bag them. Don't do that.
Just, watch out next homebrew con when we're sharing a room.
My good little Earl Grey.
Although number three is good too.
It is good, but number one's the best of the three beers.
Yeah, number one has more of a bitterness level.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the two are the same temperature. It's a little bit more brighter. It's a little bit more bite. And number three is a little, compared to number one, is a little more watery. So.
I just think you got a better hop extraction. Maybe not a bittering charge, but you got a better hop extraction from number one because they were weighted and fully submersed the whole time.
I mean, it's got to help with the bittering a little bit, I would think.
Yeah, right.
Sure. I mean, you're not isomerizing those alpha acids, but if you've ever chewed on a hop pellet, they've got some bitterness.
Yeah, it's just like swallowing Red Man.
On their own. Oh, God. Ooh. Memories. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Do they still make Big League Chew?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
You remember the shredded bubble gum?
Sure.
That was, you know, candy cigarettes are iffy, but, you know, do they still sell Big League Chew?
I bet they do.
Remember that came out because, you know, ball players, professional ball players at the time were chewing tobacco and spitting in the in the outfield and such. And so, you know, there's a marketing opportunity for you, bubblegum people. Okay. Wow. Well, that was fun.
This was actually one of the better hop sampler experiments that we've done, in my opinion, because it wasn't a total guessing match. You know, there's been a lot of them when we're like, well, I have no idea. So we just kind of, at least I just kind of pick and go. But this time there really was a difference in all three of these beers. We don't know what happened with number one. It could have been a brewing mistake. Number two. But one and three were perfectly drinkable beers. One was our favorite. And one was the one that was brewed the way you should brew it, meaning you weight the hops and they're fully submersed and all that. So there you go, best practices.
Yeah, I'd say if you want to get your money out of your hops, weight them and put them below. I mean, why would you not? I mean,
exactly.
You know, other than convenience. I mean, I can see if you've got your beer in a carboy, it's difficult to get a bag in and out, especially with marbles in there. And another hot tip, don't put those glass marbles through your garbage disposal.
Oh, yeah. That's yeah.
That was a brewing disaster. Jeez, I'm getting more forgetful. Years ago, I had my bag full of hop pellets, you know, and they were sopping wet. And I was like, okay, I'll just throw these down the garbage disposal. Oh, the racket.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like, oh, no. And so I had to take the garbage disposal off and take it outside and physically get in there and, like, bang it upside down on the, you know, patio and like, dig in there and get the fragments of glass out until it could like, freely spin again. So don't do that. Don't put best practices, get a sifter or a sieve or a colander or whatever and put your hops in there. And then, you know, wash, you know, like panning for gold. You're panning for glass marbles and make sure all those glass marbles are out of there before you put them in your, you know, put the hops in your garbage disposal. Whew, that was a pain in the butt.
I guess so.
Not as much as a pain in the butt as when we tried to garbage dispose a bunch of old sauerkraut that was just like, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
And we put too much of it down there, and I had to get a new garbage disposal. So I now know how to install a garbage disposal.
Well, when you and I both lived in the same apartment complex for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Stonehenge.
Yes.
Well,
Stonehenge.
One of the tenants, none that we were friends with, but one of the tenants decided to clean out her aquarium in the garbage disposal. And she poured aquarium sand down the garbage disposal.
Oh.
And I got to clean that up.
Oh.
That was really fun.
Yeah.
Yay, college days.
Everybody knows this story, but the first time I met you was when you tried to collect a second rent check from me that month.
That's right.
Or a month.
A month.
Because our landlord lost our rent checks.
But the fun thing about that was that two of the best friends I've had in my whole life I met because of that, in essence, you know, became friends with.
Yeah. I was like, well, I already paid my rent. And please don't let him cash that second rent check, because I don't got that much money. above and beyond the $222 rent, I have $34.17. So please, please don't cash that second check.
Oh, those were the days.
Memories. Okay. All right,
we're padding.
Yeah, this is fun. You know, when we started this, I was worried that, you know, am I going to get a half an hour out of this? And now here we are. It's like 50 minutes in. But it's fun. I hope everybody.
Well, okay, so let's go back and cap. Let's
recap
this.
Recap.
Because the pink the Pink Hop, I want to give a thumbs up to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And definitely thumbs up to Jason Reisinger of Middleton, Idaho for sending those. And I still have some. I still have some in the freezer.
Oh, nice. Awesome. The farm that brewed that originally came up with this hop is the same farm that came up with Idaho 7.
Oh, you've been Googling.
So I've been Googling. And
we also liked Idaho 7 a lot, didn't we?
We like Idaho 7, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is a nice hop. Sometimes these experimental hops that I've had in the past, I've been like, ooh, that's not so good. I don't really like that. This one I like. This one is good. I don't know how to be. It's a bittering hop, but I'm sure it'd be fine.
Yeah.
13-14% alpha acids. It's got to be a decent bittering hop, I would think.
Yeah.
But it has a nice stone fruit. I got more stone fruit and honey than I got citrus and pine. Based on the descriptors,
I got a taste of honey.
Got a taste of honey.
And that album cover got me through puberty.
I got whipped cream and other delights.
Oh no, whipped cream and other delights. That's the one.
Yeah.
Ooh, bum 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 bum. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's that. And
I've had a beer. It's moist January. I'm not drinking as much beer. My tolerance is way low. I'm a cheap date.
Just in January, though.
That's right. What's February?
Foamy February.
That's right.
Yes.
There we go. Looking forward to that.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right.
Well, Steve, I've got things, good things for you to taste in the next videos that we produce. I've got this oat malt stout that I'm dry hopping right now. Mm-hmm. I got the veneer. Mead ingredient kit from Groenfell.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Meadery. Yeah, Susan and I bottled that the other day. We didn't have to prime it, so you know it's primed correctly.
So it's okay.
that's going to be a good one. And there's more stuff coming down the line. So, yay, 2024.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've got a... Maris Otter based pale ale in the secondary right now.
Wow.
It's actually in my beer fridge and it's really lagering. I mean, I've had it in there for about three weeks, maybe four now. And I'll get that bottle in the next, couple of weeks. It's just kind of hanging out, doing its thing. Oh, and when I bottle this beer, I'll taste it as I'm getting ready to prime it. And I was pretty frugal with the hops on this one. I've been kind of in this like no hop phase. Like I want it to be in balance, but I'm not big on the hops.
Hmm.
But then I thought, I wonder if I didn't under hop this a little bit. And I've got a milliliter of El Dorado hop oil.
Ooh.
So I may or may not add that.
I'd say do.
Well, okay.
No, use your judgment, obviously.
And we'll see how it tastes.
Yeah.
So. That's great. What I've got going at the moment.
All right. Well, be careful out in the you're not going anywhere, but don't stick. It's what do you say about the weather?
A la
W.C. Fields?
Oh, it's taint a fit night out for man or beast.
But tomorrow will be better.
Tomorrow will be better.
All right, Steve. Thank you, sir.
Cheers.
Well, thanks again to Steve. I think we were on the right track there. I think that we just, when we were bottling, we just forgot to prime that first six-pack. I don't think that's the first time that's happened. It's rare, but what are you going to do? At least it was the control and not one of the dry-hopped ones, so we were able to compare those side-by-side. Hey, don't forget about the new discount code for highgravitybrew.com. BB10, that's BB10, will get you 10% off beer ingredients when you put that code in at checkout. That includes everything that you see under the beer ingredients menu on highgravitybrew.com. Enter BB10 at checkout or go to basicbrewing.com and click on the High Gravity ad on the right-hand side and the code will be entered automatically. The code's not available with other offers, but what a deal. That's BB10, BB10 at highgravitybrew.com. That's highgravitybrew.com. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy,
write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. Please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. It's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.